The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This episode of the Old Dogs REI Network is brought to you by Mino Studio.
In a world where jobs are how most people make money, one man, one desire, one challenge dares to break the mold. Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network, where we don't work for money. Money works for us. Coming soon, viewer discretion advised.
Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network, where cash flow is king. Real estate investing, the means, so you can enjoy your retirement dreams. This is the show where we cut right to the chase. No sales pitch, no long monologues, just simple how-to real estate investing advice, so you can earn the passive income you need to enjoy your retirement today. And now, your host and chief old dog, Bill Manicero.
Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network. I'm your host, Bill Manicero, and this is a show where 50-plussers and anyone else who wants to join us get solid, no-sales-pitch real estate investing advice to help generate real cash flow. This podcast airs twice weekly on Mondays and Fridays, and if you aren't already a subscriber, go to iTunes, type in Old Dog, spelled D-A-W-G, find our podcast, and subscribe. Well, we've got a great show for you today. As you know, I am an Airbnb guy. I've got some Airbnb units in one of my apartments. I love Airbnb and everything about it. We've got a guy here, though, that is crushing it. I mean, crushing it on Airbnb. And his name is Brian Page. Now, Brian's story is real interesting. He became a millionaire in his 20s as a residential real estate investor, only to lose it all in the historic crash of 2008. Starting over with no credit or ability to buy property, Brian discovered a way to use other people's money to earn income. He went on to make six figures in 6 months, earning over $300,000 his first year, renting and listing properties on Airbnb. Realizing that no one at the time was teaching how to build and scale an Airbnb business, Brian created training called the B&B Formula. His masterclass is now the world's best-selling Airbnb training. He has taught now thousands of people from 38 countries how to build a six- to seven-figure Airbnb business, with several of his students now doing over 1 million in bookings. Brian has worked with such big names as Ty Lopez, Grant Cardone, and Dean Graziosi, and he and his students have been featured in Forbes, Entrepreneur, and Inc. magazine. And the neat thing about this is that he's passionate about helping people create new sources of income and becoming financially free. Well, Brian, welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network.
Thanks, Bill. I think I'm becoming an old dog myself here.
just listening to me go on and on here.
I don't know what the cutoff is, but I'd like to be an old dog as well.
Oh, hey, you're an honorary old dog today. Although, you know, you kind of sound like a young pup. We still let you in the club here. No problem. Well, Brian, I am really, really curious about how you got into this. You obviously started sort of the traditional route as a residential real estate investor. Tell us your story. Where are you from and how you got into real estate in general?
Yeah. Well, I was a real estate investor right out of college. I didn't have very good luck holding down jobs. I got fired from most of the jobs that I had and thought maybe I should be an entrepreneur and tried a whole bunch of businesses that failed miserably. I couldn't make any money in network marketing. And I tried a landscaping business. I tried all kinds of things that failed. But I did remember reading, you know, that a lot of people built their wealth and became millionaires in real estate. And so I just thought, you know what, real estate is probably what I need to focus on. And I started getting into flipping. That was the thing that I really focused on, and ended up flipping over 100 properties, completely renovating them and flipping them, and did really well with that in my 20s, and became a millionaire in my 20s doing that and collecting properties and a portfolio and all that stuff. And all went really well until the big crash. That was where I lost everything that I had. All my properties were taken back by the banks, and I basically was back at ground zero. And it was years of just kind of trying to figure out what the next business was going to be. I was kind of done with real estate, as I'm sure a lot of people had a bad taste in their mouth after 2008. And I didn't really know what to do. I was working a job that I didn't really love. And I had a little room in my two-bedroom apartment. My roommate moved out, and I thought, you know what, let's Airbnb it. And it was just kind of a side hustle at the time, a way to make some extra money, but it ended up being something that I scaled into a really profitable business. And then from there, it was kind of what I became known for.
Wow. So you started with just renting out a room. And then at that point, you said, okay, this is nice. This is a nice income. How did you scale from that point forward? I mean, did you need to have a lot of extra cash? Or what was sort of the steps in that beginning stage there?
Well, you know, there's an interesting story behind that, because I can't really take credit with the idea. I was renting this room on Airbnb. I made enough money to cover the rent and utilities, which was awesome, because I was basically apartment hacking, what I call apartment hacking. And that was awesome. But I didn't have the credit or the money or even the will to go out and buy properties. But I was working this job, like I said, about 50 hours a week. And I was on this flight and for work. And I sat down next to this gentleman who I just had this air of wealth about him. He seemed very wealthy and successful. I started asking him what he did. And he said, I buy and sell companies. I'm an angel investor in tech companies and that kind of stuff. And he was very, very successful. And he started asking me about my Airbnb thing. And I couldn't figure out why he kept asking me all these questions. He was prodding and going deep and wanting to know more about how much I was making and all this stuff. And I was like, surely this guy doesn't want to do Airbnb in his house. But he said to me, Brian, I think you're sitting on something really big here. And I said, well, yeah, I mean, if I could buy properties and do this, you know, there might be some money in it, but I don't really have the ability to buy properties. He's like, no, you don't need to buy properties. You just need to control them. And if you can control them through leases with the permission of the owners, then you can scale this thing. And that one idea became like the thing. And I went home and immediately started looking for properties that were for lease. And I got my first little apartment around the corner, a couple blocks away. And this lady was there. She had a sign in the front yard. And I just approached her and said, hey, I want to rent your property, but I don't want to live in it. Will you hear me out on this crazy idea? And she actually said yes. And I got written permission on the lease to do this. And I turned around, listed it on Airbnb. And the first month on the first little one bedroom, I made $1,600 net after all expenses paid, $1,600 a month, and went on to make between $1,600 and $2,100 every month on that little unit. And that just changed my life, because at that point I knew I could just go and duplicate the same process.
Okay, that's great. So is this what's called arbitrage?
Yeah, there's all kinds of names for it. I mean, you can call it rental arbitrage is a great way to describe what it is. But yeah, essentially you're just taking a little property. It can be a one bedroom or a three bedroom house or a condo or townhouse. And you take whatever the market rent is, and you can make anywhere from 200 to 300% more by turning it into a short-term rental. So $1,000 unit, you could quite reasonably make $3,000 a month on Airbnb with it.
Okay, that's great. Now, technically, was it a sublet then with this? I mean, where you're, they would have to agree to let you sublet it. I mean, you're not really renting out a lease to somebody, but how does it look sort of legally on paper there?
Sure. Well, that's one of the biggest misconceptions. It's not a sublease. And the reason why it's not a sublease is because, first of all, there's no document that anybody's signing. A sublease is obviously a legal document that somebody signs. that says they're going to now pay the rent. And with Airbnb guests, nobody's agreeing to do that. They're just coming in for a couple nights. And the easiest analogy that I have as to why it's not a sublet is if you stay in a hotel. And if you stay in a hotel and you pay the money, just because you're paying the money doesn't mean you're subleasing the hotel room, right? That would be ridiculous. So it's the same thing with guests. These are not tenants. These are guests staying in the property. So there is no sublease. But what I do to make sure that the owners understand is I just add an addendum on to the end of the lease. And the addendum is just really simple. It just says, essentially, Brian, who's leasing the property, is not going to live in the property. But the owner gives him permission to have guests stay in there. Whoever Brian approves to stay in the house gets to stay in the house, essentially. And Brian will pay that lease for a year or 6 months, whatever the term is that I agree to with them. And that's it. And once they sign that, I'm good to go. And you know, a lot of owners say no, they're not interested, but some people do. And I find if I go out and approach five or six different owners in a weekend, one of them's going to say yes. And I don't need a lot of these properties to really add up to a lot of money. And of course, since your audience is a lot of real estate investors, they may already own their property, so they can just skip this whole process and list what they have on Airbnb.
That is fascinating. Now, with that that property, of course, you do have some startup costs, right? Because let's say you're, I mean, unless it's a furnished apartment, right? You've got to put some money into the property to get it furnished and sort of ready for Airbnb, right?
Yeah, well, there's a couple things. The answer is it depends. So if you're going to get a furnished property, which is what I tell most people to focus on a furnished property, then you're going to look at first month's rent and deposit and maybe a little bit of expenses to get towels or soaps or shampoos, whatever you're going to put in there to kind of hotelify it. So there's going to be a little bit of expense there. If you're going to furnish it, then you're going to add on a little bit more money. So let's say an example of a $1,000 per month unit. You're looking at $2,000 to get into a furnished unit roughly. And if it's not furnished, let's say it's $5,000 or $6,000 to furnish it and get the first month's and rent and deposit. But still, in the grand scheme of things with real estate, that's a very small amount of money to create an ongoing monthly cash flow and a significant cash flow we're talking about. We're not talking about a few hundred dollars a month here. So that's significant. But the thing that I've learned after I've done this long enough, I started having all these students that I had taught how to do this, and they started to come up with even more brilliant ideas and ways to do this. And one of my students, who now has 10 listings, she lives in Washington State. She has 10 listings. She never signed a single lease. And I found out what she was doing was just partnering with the owners. And she would just pitch the owner on, hey, look, you're asking $1,000 for this unit. What if I get you $1,300 a month? Would you be interested? And it's no extra work for you. I'll do all the work. And of course, the owner is going to say, I guess, yeah, I'd be interested in that. So that's what she does. She signs people up, basically offers them a service, does not sign a lease, does not pay them a first month's rent, does not pay them a deposit, just offers them a service. And she makes incredible money doing that. So there's all kinds of ways to do this.
So she's not, because it looks like with the $1,300 going to, she just has, I guess, a slight markup on it as opposed to, you know, you getting the bulk of that payment, right?
Yeah, well, as an example, and I keep using $1,000 because it's a nice round number, but let's say it's $1,000, you're bringing in $3,000 on Airbnb with all the bookings, then you're going to take $1,000, give it to the owner for the rent that they normally would get, and then the other $2,000 you split. So you get to walk away with $1,000 a month without a lease and without any downside. So I don't mind signing a lease because I get to keep all the profit. I don't give the owners any profit, and they understand that. They're just getting what they ask for, which is their market rent. For people that have limited funds, they can start literally with $0, go get one of these signed up, and then the money coming in, they can essentially bootstrap themselves into a lease.
That's fascinating. Now, do you have a certain sort of target property? Are you looking at one bedroom, two bedrooms, studios? I mean, what's sort of your ideal property that you select?
Well, me personally, I have my preference, but I've noticed that with all my students, they've done all kinds of properties from single family homes, 3 and 4 or 5 bedrooms to little studios and 1 bedrooms and 2 bedroom townhouses and condos and that kind of thing. And any of them will work. But I tell people to focus on the small, cheap end first, because when they first get started, you don't want to have to put a lot of money into furnishings. So obviously, to get a studio up and running, it costs very little money to furnish one versus trying to get a 4 bedroom house up and furnished and cost a lot of money. So I tell people, look, start small. And then if you like it, then go get a bigger property and a bigger property. But the interesting thing is, it's not just limited to properties. I've got students now that are doing this with Airstream trailers and with yachts and boats. And I mean, it's amazing. Like, one of my students found an Airstream that was in somebody's driveway, and he approached the guy and said, hey, will you rent that to me long term? And the guy's like, I guess. So he said, how much? The guy said, I don't know, $250 a month. So he rented it for $250, put it up on Airbnb, and it brings in like $200 to $2,500 a month.
That's awesome.
With Airstream trailer and making all kinds of money. So it doesn't have to be standalone properties. Airbnb allows you to list almost anything that you can sleep in can go on Airbnb.
Well, isn't one of the more successful Airbnbs actually like a treehouse, I think, that somebody has that they rent it out for like $300 a night or something? That's what I had heard.
Treehouses are like printing money because there's not enough of them. And even the Airbnb founder said, if you have a treehouse, you're going to make a fortune because there are not enough of them on the site and people are dying to book a treehouse. And I mean, how much does it cost even to build an elaborate treehouse? It doesn't cost that much.
That's so crazy. And I've heard of also people with those tiny houses, you know, where you literally just roll it on. It's like a trailer, but it, you know, put it on a lot. Even if you just have a lot in the mountains that you never use, you could put it there and turn it into an Airbnb.
Tiny houses are money. They are money. And off-grid houses, off-grid cabins, yurts. I mean, you know, some people want that off-grid experience. And if you have that in the middle of the woods, one of my clients has 5 cabins in the middle of the woods in rural Canada, right across the border, not near anything. And all of them are booked all the time because people want to escape and go stay in his cabins. And he has them all on Airbnb.
That's fascinating. Man, oh, man. Well, this it sounds interesting, but what, you know, one of the aspects of it that I guess that you kind of look at is you go, what about that owner or the person that's leasing it to you? You know, they may like you and say, hey, you're a nice guy, you're professional, sort of, but, you know, how do I know the people coming in here won't destroy my place?
Well, you know, I get that a lot. The interesting thing is that, you know, with Airbnb damage, it's like a fraction of a fraction of a fraction of a percent, the amount of damage, the number of cases where there's actually damage. And Airbnb tracks this because they have their own $1 million guarantee. So anybody that uses Airbnb gets a $1 million coverage guarantee from Airbnb. And then there's also additional supplemental insurance that you can get. It doesn't cost a lot of money. There's an entire industry that's sprung up now around short-term rentals where they offer insurance just for this purpose. So I strongly recommend people get that supplemental insurance as well. But the damage is are so rare. And the reason is because the difference between a tenant and a guest is night and day. A tenant looks at a property like it's theirs. They have ownership in it. It's like, this is my property and you got to get permission to come in here and I'm going to live here and I'm going to do what I want here for the next year. Whereas a guest doesn't see it that way. A guest is coming in for 1 or 2 nights. So they're not going to leave their car in the driveway on blocks. You know, they're not going to have their dog destroy the backyard over the course of a year. They're not going to paint one of the bedrooms a weird color without asking the owner. I mean, guests don't do those kind of things. They're not coming in for more than a couple nights, so they're not going to cause those kind of damages. And a lot of times with tenants, those are the damages that really cost the money, is somebody who doesn't maintain the property and destroys it slowly over the course of the term of the lease. So it's a completely different mindset. And the guests that come in on Airbnb, they also have to give Airbnb their identification, like their license or their passport. Their credit card is on file with Airbnb. You can request deposits of them before they show up. So there's just all kinds of additional things that you get with them that make them so much better than a tenant. And I, knock on wood, I've never had any significant damage. I maybe had somebody break a plate or a glass or leave the place a little bit messy that my cleaners have to clean up extra. But I've never had anybody damage a property. And is extremely, extremely rare. So to me, I'd rather have guests than tenants any day.
That's great. That's a great, compelling reason to explain to anybody that you might be, you know, sort of pitching to take mm-hmm. this on. That's great. Now, when you had the property in your own apartment, I mean, somebody comes, they stay, they leave. You know, you'd probably go in, wash the sheets and the towels, and you know, you could do a lot of that stuff yourself. But I could see how, you know, you start getting a few of these, and you know, and especially if it's, you know, people only stay in a couple of days here and there, that seems like that would be quite an effort, you know, for somebody to maintain multiple properties when they're, you know, they could be washing, you know, laundry every day, you know.
Believe me, it is. But here's the thing. I never, ever suggest that anybody clean their own properties. That's the last thing that you want to do. So what I do is that I teach people, look, you need to get a team in place. So you want to get a great cleaning company, first of all, hopefully a big franchise company that can handle a lot of properties, that's already handling a bunch of properties. You get them on board. And then not only do you want them on board, you want to have a virtual front desk. That's a phrase that I kind of came up with, which is basically, you know, once you get a bunch of these listings, you're running your own little hotel, just that the hotel rooms are split up all over the city or multiple cities. And so you need to have a front desk. The front desk is basically going to handle all of the guest requests, just like in a hotel. The problem is you don't want to be the front desk person, because as you get 5, 6, 7 listings, it's going to be all the time. Like 2 a.m, people are going to message you on the platform and ask for, hey, I need an extra towel. And it's it's in the middle of the night, you know? So you're going to have these kind of requests. So you can thankfully, nowadays there's services that will do this for you that you can automate all this. And I teach people basically, how do you automate this with the cleaners, with if something breaks in one of the properties and you have to have a handyman run over to the properties and take care of little issues that come up, all these things, so that you can remove yourself from the day-to-day operations. Because there's no reason to start a business like this if it's going to take your time. And I don't want to do it if it takes a bunch of my time. So the idea here is to make it as easy or easier than just being a normal real estate investor and having rentals. You can make it super, super easy and low amount of time involvement. And that's really what I am an expert at, is teaching people how to automate their Airbnb business. And if you're doing one Airbnb or two, you can do it all yourself. Who cares? But that's not the point. The point is that you want to scale. And when you start scaling, you have all the issues that any business has when they scale. And I'm a big believer in outsourcing and automating.
That's great. Yeah, one thing that I notice is that and I only have 3 little units that are active, but you get a lot of inquiries. You get a lot of folks that are just kind of shopping and asking you questions. Can I bring my pet llama? Can I whatever it may be. Oh, yeah. What are the directions? What's the code number to get in? Oh, I'm running late. I'm not going to arrive at this time. I'm going to arrive at this time. Does that front desk also handle those inquiries as well?
Yeah, I don't do any of that. I never talk to a guest unless there's some kind of emergency that my front desk people can't handle. So I literally don't talk to them. I don't know who's coming. I don't know who's going. It's all on them. And it's great because, you know, you pay them a few pennies on the dollar for their time to be able to manage these things. And there's all kinds of ways you can do this. There's not just one way to do this. You can hire a virtual assistant overseas. You can use a service online. There's all kinds of services that will take a little bit of your revenue to handle this for you. But the idea is you want to get all these properties in a system so that you're not doing that stuff. And you're right around the phase where you'd probably want to consider starting to automate things. And the way I look at it is I'd rather have 97 cents of every dollar and do next to nothing versus 100 cents of every dollar and do it myself. And because I run multiple businesses, my Airbnb is just one of them. And I think this is why most people don't go beyond 2 listings. Something like 98% of people on Airbnb only have 1 or 2 listings. And the reason is because once you start scaling, it gets complicated. And so I try to help clear the fog and get people to build the right kind of automated system so that they can add as many properties as they like. And once you start adding, that's where the numbers get really, really big. You can get, you know, well over 6 figures a year in net with just 5 or 6 properties. And if you want to go to 7 figures, there's a lot of people doing that. I got a couple students that just crossed $1 million per year threshold. So that's big numbers, unbelievable. You know, and it's more than just a little side business if you know how to do it.
Now there, at least from, again, my limited experience here, is that the review is critical. You know, they're getting favorable reviews, and I had one unit that I had, and it was just real tough because we had we also have tenants staying in this place too, so you can't really control what's going on in the other rooms. You know, you can make their room real great and everything, but this other tenant had brought in a bed bug problem, and it went into the Airbnb unit. And once that review was written, I might as well have just taken it off the market. And I did. I eventually had to take it off the market, that particular unit, you know, because that review just killed me. And so are there things that you build into your system that sort of help you get that good review or deal with the negative ones?
Yeah, absolutely. There's all kinds of techniques for this. A lot of it comes down to what you do well before they ever make a review and leave a review, and making sure that if there's ever an issue, if there's ever a single complaint from a guest, that I immediately want to make that right. So, and that could be something as simple as, hey, I'm going to give you $20 off your stay. You know, something small amount of money just to make, you know, let's just say they complain about something that's really kind of obnoxious. I can still give them $20 off, which will make them really happy. It's almost like an ethical bribe. And it's saying, look, I'm taking care of you, so I hope this is still a 5-star stay. If it's not, please let me know. And I'm not doing that. Of course, my virtual front desk is doing that. The person messaging my people is doing that. And it's going above and beyond like that. And you're still going to get people that are going to leave you bad reviews. But the good thing on Airbnb is, you know, if you get enough reviews, it doesn't matter if once in a while you get a bad one. Because, you know, once you get hundreds and hundreds of reviews, it doesn't matter if you have one or two that are not excellent. And you can always reply on those reviews, too, and tell your side of the story and say, look, I did everything I could to make this customer happy. And I'm sorry, there was something beyond my control or whatever. And I can assure everybody that I have a great place and I give people a great experience. And you can put that in the review so you can kind of give your comments. But it's you're right. Reviews are very important. And it's part of the business. It's part of the how it all works. But the key is having the right systems in place, because systems can kind of help knock out any of those problems that would come down the line that you're not paying attention to. And I'll just give you, let me just give you one example. So one example is keys. Keys are the bane of my existence. I hate keys, and I never want any of my listings to have keys because people lose them. Guests misplace them, or they don't put them back where they're supposed to, and the next guest shows up and they can't get in the property, or the maids lose the keys. It's just on and on and on. So early on, I decided every property I have should have an electronic lock, a code-based entry. And I will never use keys for that very reason. So it's kind of a functional thing that I put in place to make sure that that never causes a problem again. So people are not going to give me a bad review saying, oh my gosh, I was locked out. There was no key. I had to wait 20 minutes for somebody to bring me a key. You know, those kind of things. It sounds kind of obvious, but you learn the certain things that are going to cause problems, and then you essentially quell them by putting the right kind of processes in place. And these are all the kind of things that I love teaching people so that they can make sure they get the 5-star reviews.
Do your students sort of walk away with a manual or something that, you know, that has all these systems in it?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's not as complicated as it sounds. It's usually some very basic things. And another thing that I like to do is I like to give a bottle of wine to every guest. And it sounds like it's going over the top, but you can actually get a really good wine for $3 a bottle at like your wine superstores. And you get a brand that's perhaps new. It came out in the last couple of months, so nobody knows what it is. So they don't know it's cheap wine, but you're giving them a cheap bottle of wine. And they don't expect that. You know, most people, when they check in a hotel, the hotel certainly does not give them a bottle of wine. And so you're going above and beyond. So when they arrive, you're just like, hey, I hope you enjoy this bottle of wine on me, you know, and enjoy the city and enjoy my town. And then, you know, that goes a long way. Those little things go a long way, and it doesn't cost much to do those kind of things.
That's great. Good idea. Do you, it sounds like too, especially as you get into multiple properties, your team is critical. It sounds like it. I mean, you really have to have, you know, cleaners that you know are going to do are your properties like all over the place? Are they all in your neighborhood or how do you manage that aspect of it?
Well, yeah, your team is very, very important, but I'm not a fan of hiring employees. I don't like having employees. I don't like all the hassles that go along with having employees. So everybody that works essentially in my team is independent contractor, and oftentimes they're not even in that local area. So the only exception would be the cleaning company. The cleaning company obviously has to be local, but they're going to be a big company like a Molly Maids or a Maid Brigade, like one of those big franchises. And so they're not my employee. They're an independent company. And then my virtual front desk is going to be an independent contractor or an independent service. So you can put all these team members in place, but they're not people that you have to hire or fire. Because, you know, who wants to get into that if you're not – that's not something you normally do. So the idea is, yeah, you want to get the right team members into place and then have them all communicating with each other so that the virtual front desk can coordinate with the cleaners. And the cleaners can – and the handyman can coordinate with the person who's communicating with the guests. And all that can be done for you. Once you set it up, it's kind of like you set it up and you're just a traffic cop and you just step in when blow the whistle when there's something that needs to be looked at, but you're not doing the day to day. And that's something that when I started out, nobody was teaching. I mean, nobody online was teaching this. There wasn't any YouTube videos on how do you automate your Airbnb business. And so I started getting into like figuring out how to do that. And I was the first person to start teaching that. And that's when people started reaching out to me and saying, oh my gosh, Brian, I want to know how to get a whole bunch of properties like you have. And how do I do this? And so I just kind of put it all together into a formula an easy step-by-step process where people can do steps 1 through 8, and by the time they're done, they'll have all their properties in the system.
That's great. Now, with signing that lease, it seems like it's kind of a little bit risky. You're going to sign a lease. You're going to be responsible for paying that landlord mm-hmm. first of the month, $1,000 or whatever it may be. And, what happens if you don't pull in that kind of income?
Well, this is where I suggest, first of all, properties are always going to make more short-term rental than long-term, even if you're not booking the calendar up. So, for example, if you're charging $100 a night on a $1,000 a month unit, and you only book half the nights, that's $1,500. You're already making more than what it costs you for the rent and the utilities. You're already cash flow positive. And that's only booking half the nights. On average, according to the data, on average, you're going to book about 65 to 70% of all of the nights in any given month. And this is across all markets. That's just average on Airbnb. So you're going to be cash flow positive. It's just a matter of how much you're going to be cash flow positive. But I tell people, look, if you don't know and you don't feel confident, don't sign a lease. Go get a partnership with an owner first. Now, I felt confident jumping into a lease because I was already doing a room on Airbnb. And I knew, holy crap, this little room brings in this much money, which is more than the lease and the utilities on this other unit. So I know it's going to make more money because it's a whole standalone property. A standalone one bedroom is going to make more than a room in my own apartment. So I was ready to jump in with both feet, and I had no fears about doing that. So I tell people, look, if you don't feel confident signing a lease, at first go get a partnership with an owner, list that for a couple months, and you'll know immediately what that thing's bringing in. And by that, you can say, all right, I feel confident I'm making $3,000 a month on this one bedroom. Well, I'm pretty reasonably going to make $3,000 a month if I go sign a lease on this other one better. So it gives you the confidence to jump in to your market more fully. But with that being said, a lot of people that I teach, they jump right in and sign a lease, and they do great. And so it's just a matter of understanding, basically, that you're just taking something wholesale and you're selling it at retail. You're taking a month and you're splitting it up into days and you're selling those days. And that's really all we're doing. We're just taking what it costs us on a monthly basis, and we're making way more on a nightly basis.
Let's say somebody wants to do this, but they're looking at, well, does I have to go into a tourist destination like beachfront property or a mountain, cabin? Or, what if they don't feel comfortable, or maybe, because I imagine the rents would be much higher in those areas, so it'd be much more expensive out of pocket too. What do you say to someone like that?
Yeah, that's a big misconception because people sometimes confuse Airbnb with VRBO, which is vacation rental by owner. So they think that Airbnb is vacation travelers. But the vast majority of people on Airbnb are not traveling for vacation because Airbnb is in every town, every city, no matter what size, there's Airbnb there. And people aren't going to all those places as tourist destinations. Now, I do live in a tourist city. I live in Charleston, South Carolina. It's very touristy here. But my students who are all over the world and all over the country in big cities, small towns, they're in towns I've never heard of. They're in towns of under 10,000 people that are certainly not tourist destinations. And the reason that you can be successful in places that aren't tourist destinations is because people travel for many different reasons. And the dead giveaway of that is the hotel industry. So if you're driving up Highway 95 or across the country on I-40, you're going to see hotels everywhere. They're not in tourist destinations. They're just in places that people need to sleep. And so the dead giveaway is if you live in a town or a city with hotels, that means there's an industry that is doing nothing but serving people that come in and stay short term. And so we're going to serve short term people as well. It might not even be the same people because people that travel on Airbnb are people that just don't even use hotels. So the short answer is no, it's not just for tourist destinations. It's for any destination where people need to stay overnight. And they might be traveling to see family. They might be traveling for a job. They might be moving to the area and need a temporary place to stay. They might be going to a convention center or a hospital or any number of reasons, a college to visit a college they're going to attend. And so they all need places to sleep. And that's what Airbnb caters to.
Great. Well, one thing that, I kind of look at is too, you've done this for a while and obviously very successful at it. What sort of common mistakes are made early on for somebody, starting off trying to start an Airbnb business?
I think if they don't know what they're doing when it comes to scaling and don't know how to pitch an owner, they're not going to get properties very easily. I think picking the wrong location and by wrong location, I don't mean the wrong city or town. I mean the wrong location in that city or town. So there's a lot of elements to that you need to know how to do properly. And I think most people just don't have a plan, and then they get into it and they're overwhelmed and they don't have a plan, and they then they don't go anywhere with it. So you really got to learn from somebody that has done it. And not only have I done it, a lot of people I've taught have done it and done even more than I have. And so you got to learn from people that have gone before you, I think, is the critical key.
What's sort of one of the key things that you've done to really make it successful? I mean, there were some things that just sort of brought you over the top, thinking, oh, man, I wish I would have done this when I started.
Doing as little as possible and outsourcing everything. That's I mentioned that several times, but that's definitely the most important thing, is stepping back and letting other people manage everything for you. And that's critical.
Was it difficult to find the right people, though? Did you have to go through a number of different folks?
I did. I wasted a lot of time and energy and money looking at the wrong options and not knowing how to do that and not knowing who I could trust that could take over. So, yeah, that's kind of what I specialize in, is showing people how to find those right team members, no matter where they live.
Now, our audience, as you know, are folks that are 50 years of age and older. Some of them are approaching retirement. Some are already in retirement. Those that are approaching it are kind of saying, you know, gee, am I going to have what I need to have sort of that retirement dream that I've always sought? And or if somebody's already there, they're realizing, gee whiz, you know, either I'm not getting the cash flow to be able to do those things, or I have a nest egg here and I want to be able to grow that nest egg and I'm looking for good investments. What advice would you have for our audience specifically about what you do that that could work really well for those in retirement or approaching retirement?
Well, that's a good question, because when I first started out, I was helping all kinds of people, but I didn't know who they were. And I started recently asking people to send in videos to me, like testimonial videos of what they're doing with the program and what they're doing with my training. And I was shocked at how many people were retired or post-retired that were doing this. And on my website, bnbformula.com, there's a reviews page with like hundreds and hundreds of videos. And there's all kinds of people on there that are in their retirement years that that are doing this. And a lot of them with no real estate experience at all. In fact, there's one guy named David. He's in Loganville, Georgia, a very small town in Georgia. And he had no retirement plan at all. And he's now got three listings making $3,500 a month. And he's basically like, you saved my retirement, because I have these three properties and they're bringing in money every month consistently. And he had never done real estate, and he's doing really well. And then I've got a lot of people in their 70s, all the way into their 80s, that have never used Airbnb before and have just secured several properties, and they've got them up on the site and they're doing it. And they're saying the same thing. They're like, I have a retirement now. And so it's really, really cool to see that. So it's absolutely a retirement solution, especially for people that don't feel like they are in a place where they want to go buy a property or put 20% down, or they don't want to take that leap. And so now they can make this cash flow really in the next 30 days. I mean, you can do this in 30 days or less, get your first property up and running, and then from there, just add a property every few months or whatever pace you feel like going. So I believe it's an absolute game changer for people that are retiring and you know, want to do something from home. I mean, you can do this from your phone, from anywhere with a Wi-Fi connection. You know, other than setting out the property in the beginning, which is a little bit of work, there's not much work once you set it up and you have it automated.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. Well, you've created just an awesome enterprise, both with, I'm sure, with your properties out there that you're generating income from, as well as your educational business here. What's sort of ahead for your future? And you know, you're probably already that guy that can sit next, people can sit next to you and you can say, yeah, I'm an angel investor, or I'm a whatever, you know. What's sort of ahead for you?
Good question. I just started a podcast called Digital Titans, and Digital Titans is interviewing some of the most successful entrepreneurs in the world that make money online through various ways, not just Airbnb. And I like to interview them. That podcast just started a few days ago. And so if you want to check that out, you can just search for that on any of the iTunes or any of the podcast channels. And so I'm going to have some really fascinating guests on that show. And so that's one of the things that I do. I've got a book that I'm shopping with major publishers right now that'll be out soon. And that's going to be called Work Less, Have More, which is kind of my thing, how to work less and have more out of life. And I'm all about the cash flow. I'm all about passive income. And I love helping people to create this passive income, especially people that want to get freed of their job or just have that that safety net of other income coming in besides what they're relying on currently. So that's what I'm into. I'm into a lot of different things. I'm still an active real estate investor, still buying properties, renovating them, turning them into Airbnbs. That's something I'm doing as well. And yeah, I'd like to, it's okay with you, I'd like to invite people if they want to learn more about how to do this. I've got a free training that I could invite them to.
That would be great. That'd be great. Before we do that, we have a little session. We call it our wrap it up, where we just ask you a series of quick questions. So
sure.
You can share resources that have been valuable to you. And then you can share a little bit more about how folks can find out about what you're doing and actually get some education here. So if you're ready, we'll go ahead and move into wrap it up.
Let's do it.
All right. Favorite real estate book?
Wow. Okay. Hands down, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. It's not specifically only real estate, but it comes from, you know, one of the best guys in real estate, Kiyosaki, and I think that's my favorite book for real estate.
Same here, definitely. How about favorite just general business book?
Wow, okay, that's hard to narrow it down, but let me think here. I would say The 4-Hour Workweek by Tim Ferriss is one of my favorite books of all time. It's philosophy and business. But then I would say the most recent book would have to be Deep Work, which is an amazing, amazing book. Probably the best book I've read in the last 2 years. And I read a lot of them.
Great, great. How about most valuable website for success, of course, other than your own?
I can't plug my own.
We'll be able to plug that.
Let me think here. Best website for success. Wow. I had to pick one. Well, I would just have to say Amazon because I buy all my books on Amazon. So Amazon or Audible because I buy a lot of books and that's where I get most of my inspiration and knowledge.
Awesome. How about, do you have a favorite app on your phone?
Other than Airbnb, let me think here. I would say, gosh, that's a really good question. I would say it has to be Airbnb. I love every time it notifies me and I've just made $400 or $600 on a booking that just came in. It's kind of addictive to see that pinging.
Bing, bing, bing. Yeah, that's all money. Yeah, that's great. Fun. I love it. How about a favorite quote?
I'm thinking of the George Bernard Shaw quote. Can't remember how the quote goes. Something about the man who says it can't be done should get out of the way of the one doing it, or something along those lines. I'm butchering it, but I would say it'd have to be a quote by George Bernard Shaw.
Yeah, we can look that one up. Stick it in there. Awesome. And a final question. Okay. Let's say you lost everything. Okay. All your business, everything. And all you have is $1,000 in cash in hand. What would you do with that $1,000 to rebuild your business?
Wow. Okay. That is a good question, but I feel like you just tossed me a softball and I'm Babe Ruth because this is going to be too easy.
I know. It sounds like a setup, doesn't it?
I'm going to smack it out of the park here. Yeah. So if you have $1,000, I would say that you would go partner with an owner to get their property up on Airbnb. You wouldn't even need your $1,000. You could probably spend $100 and keep the 900 and get that on Airbnb and immediately start making $1,000 to $1,500 a month with that first listing.
Love it. Love it. Well, now let's find out about that, webinar coming up or information.
Yeah.
About how people can contact you, find out about what you do and the whole nine yards.
Sure, sure. Well, if you want to learn about me and generally what I teach, you can check out bnbformula.com. That's BNB, like Airbnb, formula.com. That's just a general website. And then if you want to check out the training, I have a free training. And that's really simple to remember. It's thefreetraining.com, thefreetraining.com. And on that training, what I do is I'll show you my properties. I'll show you each one of them, how much I'm making on each one of them. I'll show you the pitch that I give owners and exactly how I get them on board. And I'll show you what I've done with thousands of students around the world, different countries, and basically kind of walk you through the eight steps that I kind of mentioned earlier to show you how to do this in the next 30 days. And so the training's totally free. And I also do Q&A at the end and all that kind of stuff. And it may be something that you want to check out. So go to thefreetraining.com.
I love it. Well, Brian, this has been outstanding. Some good information. And sounds like you've got a niche there that just a lot of folks should be taking advantage of. It sounds awesome. Sure. We have this kind of another tradition, we're old dogs. We got a lot of traditions here, but this one, we have our guests always close us out with their best old hound dog howl. Okay. So I don't know if you're ready for this or not.
All right, I'm ready.
If you're ready, why don't you go ahead and just close us out with your best old hound dog howl.
Howl!
That was great. I love it. I love it. The dogs are barking in my neighborhood right now. That's good. Well, Brian, thanks for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Bill. This is probably one of the most fun interviews I've ever had, so I appreciate it.
You bet. I also want to thank all our old dog listeners out there, too, for joining us. I know there's a lot of other things you could be doing right now, but the fact that you've taken the time to join us means a lot, and we really appreciate it. Please note, everything that Brian talked about today will be presented in detail in our show notes, as well as all the links that he mentioned and links to his training, as well as the free training that he offered, as well as information on other things that he's doing as well. So just look for the episode with Brian Page. Well, that's the show for today. Remember, cash flow is king and real estate investing the means. Until next time, keep moving forward and may God bless.
Thank you very much for visiting the Old Dogs REI Network. We would greatly appreciate if you would stop by iTunes and let us know what you think of the show. We would love if you could subscribe to the podcast, give us a 5-star rating, and write a review. The more ratings and reviews we receive, the more visible the podcast will be to others. Thank you.